players to get an idea of what's inside of them and their minds? Have you interviewed like Towns and Okafor and Russell and some of the guys at the top, or is that something you haven't done, or you would or not yet gotten to?
Well, I observe people all the time, and whether I work with them or not, I'm always looking to see if the person is, you know, how they're behaving, and especially if I like to watch the post game interviews and listen to what they're saying, because what they're saying, I like to see if what they're saying is consistent with what they're doing. And so a lot of times you can, like Yogi Berra said, you can see a lot just by observing.
Yep.
I like to observe, you know, what people who excel in any sport or any endeavor, how do they think? How do they feel? How do they behave? I'm always fascinated in studying whether it's people from the past or people who are presently engaging in competition. I like to observe and see, okay, when they perform well, you know, what are the characteristics? Like I said, how are they behaving? How are they thinking? How are they seeing things? So, yes, to answer your question, sometimes when I'm working with them, it's not so much what they say as what they do that I go by.
Now, George, this is actually, I'll put it this way, but it's a serious question. Have you ever watched an incredible athletic performance and then you see the guy talk and you said, how can this nitwit be that good? Does that happen at all? Because some of you just don't expect them to come off the way they do with the type of performance they just put up.
Well, the answer, I don't know if I kind of look at it that way. I think I'm a little biased in the sense that I just evaluate their performance, and I'll find it curious. But I also know that we have this different intelligences. Some people may be, just because they're intelligent or they have a skill on the physical realm or even on the mental realm, it doesn't mean that they'll automatically be able to be articulate when they speak, or that they're going to be that way across the board. You'll see that some people, you're right, they just have a hard time expressing themselves, or maybe they're not very articulate. And so, yeah, I've seen that on occasion, but it's been my experience that people, when you talk about like a Dr. J or Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan, I find that their mental abilities, their abilities to see things, their intelligence is usually on the higher end. So we talk about somebody who has a high basketball IQ or somebody who has a high figure skating IQ. I think that is usually consistent with the performance, even if they can't express it. So sometimes people are very good verbally, and they can speak properly, but just because they don't speak properly doesn't necessarily mean they don't have a high IQ in what they're doing.
Well, in fairness into what you're saying, I've covered a lot of athletes that they just are not comfortable speaking in public with a camera on or a microphone, and but if you talk to them one-on-one, it's a completely different person. They don't want to come off bad, and it turns out they do then.
Yeah, because it's like anything else. The more you resist, the more you persist. So if you try not to act like you don't know what you're talking about, that's usually what you do. It's to say, hey, with performance, that's a form of performance. It's speaking in public or communicating with somebody. Can you really be, you know, is the person trustworthy? Do you feel, can you trust the person? Can you trust the environment? Can you trust yourself? So all of those things factor in to whether or not someone is able to communicate. So someone like yourself, because you're an interviewer, you have skills that allow people who come on your show to really share with you in ways maybe they wouldn't share otherwise, because you make it comfortable for them and you understand human nature, even if you're not aware of it. You have a talent, if you will, because that's why you do what you do. Maybe you do it because you love it. Maybe you do it because it's just what you do. But my sense is that there's all of these ways of knowing, and a lot of it has to do with being in the moment and really listening and being vulnerable enough to hear what is being offered.
Yep.
rather than interpreting what's being said or putting somebody in a box before you really even hear what they're saying.
That's a very good point. And by the way, for our producer, save what he just said, because it sounded like a good promo for me. I appreciate that, George. some
of
the
things. You're welcome.
That was good stuff. George Mumford, author of the new book, The Mindful Athlete: Secrets to Pure Performance. And now, George, as we mentioned, you were a roommate of Dr. J's. When did you start working with athletes? Was it pretty much immediately out of college, or a little bit later after you decided this is the career you wanted to go with? Because you did, and I apologize again, but LeBron, but you've worked with Kobe, you've worked with Michael Jordan, you worked with several teammates of Kobe over the years, and you obviously have worked with Phil Jackson and have done quite a bit with him. Were you're not an old man now, I'm sure, but were you very young when you decided this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, I started this about 30 years ago. And what the interesting thing was, it was my own recovery from, not knowing who I was when I got injured and never played basketball in college and didn't really know who I was. So years of struggling, even though I graduated from college and worked as a financial analyst for 16 years in the corporate world. It wasn't until I got into recovery from substance abuse, which began with, abusing pain medication, and then it had a progression. But when I got clean, I had chronic pain. So I learned how to deal with the pain. So I actually was working in a stress reduction clinic because I learned how to deal with my own stress of, chronic pain.
Yep.
And then when I was at the stress reduction clinic, Phil Jackson knew my boss. And it was in 1993 when the Bulls had just won 3 championships in a row. And Phil is a big proponent of developing the whole person, and he was very concerned about the guys being able to deal with the stress of success because there hadn't been a team since the Boston Celtics that won 3 championships in a row with 3-peat. So that's how I started in 1993, working with the Chicago Bulls, and then it kept evolving. Of course, I've been, Phil's been keeping me involved in his teams, and in the meantime, I started working with other athletes because once you work with Michael Jordan, that kind of gives you street cred. So then people start to think about, let me check out what this guy is about, because if he can help MJ, maybe he can help me.
Well, and you also, you didn't touch on the non-sports. You've worked with 5,000 prison inmates to help teach them mindfulness techniques, and that had to be very rewarding for you.
Yes, well, it's the same thing. Once again, some of these folks were guys that I used to get high with, or guys that I knew back from the hood, or guys that, or that's where I would have been if I didn't change my life. So it was more about how to deal with, the stress of, being in, being addicted or to something, or doing things you're not, that you're ashamed about, and how do you recover from that? How do you retain or get back in connection with your humanity, and how do you transform. So it was just, once again, to me, it's like I say to people, I work with folks from Yale or Yale, from the boardrooms to the locker rooms. It doesn't really matter if they have a mind. I could probably help them help themselves. And so, to me, it's all rewarding. I just love doing it, whether it's, like I said, athletes or executives or moms or dads or people who are in the entertainment business. Doesn't really matter. What matters is helping them be them, because I feel like I heard that when they asked Michelangelo how he was able to create these works, masterpieces, out of these blocks of marble, and he said, I just chip away to get to the masterpiece that's already there. That's how I view of my work, is everybody is a masterpiece, and if we could just help them connect with that, or help them chip away and get rid of the noise and the clutter, then that expression is going to make everybody better off.
I think, that line is about as good as some of the work Michelangelo did too. That's a great line about chipping away to get to the what's in there. George Mumford, thank you so much. Author of the new book, The Mindful Athlete: Secrets to Pure Performance, and it is available everywhere, I'm sure, right?
Yes, it's available especially on Amazon, but I think Barnes and Noble's and some of the other places, but I know for sure Barnes and Nobles and Amazon.com, you're going to order it. And then obviously Parallax Press, who is the publisher, you can get copies there as well.
Again, George, thank you for joining us. George Mumford, appreciate it.
I appreciate you inviting me, and I hope you have a wonderful day, and thank you and your listening audience.
Thank you so much. Well, we're going to take a quick break when we get back. You know what? We're not going to. We could come up with a D-bag. We're going to give you an anti-D-bag of the day, and it's a good one. We're also going to hear, we're going to get to now. We'll play a little Abner Costello, Who's On First, when we get back to. Be right back. Bag, eat a bop, bop, D-bag, eat a bop, bop, D-bag, eat a bop, bop, D-bag, douchebag. Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me. In the wheel. All right. Maybe I can go with this voice. This one I could sustain.
All right, here we go.
We're going with the anti-D-bag of the day. How familiar, I'm talking to you, how familiar are you with Bobby Bell?
Not very.
Have you ever heard the name?
Yeah, because I read a story about him recently.
Okay, and the story probably said he's a Super Bowl champion with Kansas City, played for the Gophers, great player, All-American player. As a matter of fact, he and Carl Eller were the defensive tackles, I believe, on that team. Boy, did Murray Warmoth have that wrong. One of them became a Hall of Famer at end, and the other one, Bobby Bell, Eller at end and Bell at linebacker. Bobby Bell, after more than half a century out of college, decided to get his degree. Tonight at 5:30, he will walk in the graduation ceremony at the University of Minnesota. So, I mean, he is our anti-D-bag of the day. Everything I've ever heard about him and know about him, he's just been a class act throughout the years, and it's good for him.
Yeah, Gorgie Jang went back and got his degree just this past weekend.
Same kind of guy, Gorgie Jang.
Exactly same. Exactly the same.
And his was, what, about 3 years, 4 years, if that?
Just two,
okay.
Well, two or two and a half, roughly.
Yeah, well, I guess that's pretty darn close to a guy who's more than a half a century. I can understand why you would bring that on. You'd be bringing that one up. But no, he is our guy. And the other thing I wanted to do, we have, if you would like, Saints tickets. The home opener.
New Orleans or St. Paul?
Either one. No, the Saints. St. Paul, Saints, you ninny. George Mumford, he's listening to you. I could see what he'd have to say about when I asked about the nitwits. I had that in mind. 651-989-9105. And the Simpson sisters, you call in. We have one thing you have to do, and the tickets are yours. When you call in, we will tell you. Saints home opener tickets at the new CHS Field. 651-989-9105. As you can see, the phones are starting to ring. Just put them on hold, and we'll get to them. All right, then? All righty, then. We'll put them on hold. Let's not chit-chat too long with them.
No, let's chit-chat with them. We want to make sure he's not crazy.
Well, crazy is what we attract.
Well, I mean, I'm allowed to sit back here 5-6 days a week, so I guess it couldn't be that bad.
See? It's exactly like that. All right, do we have anybody yet that... there, we got to go to the first one. We're going to have a little contest.
What kind of contest? Purple?
No, this is for Saints tickets. Whoever does the best imitation of the Simpson sisters or Pharrell... Scotty Farrell, we'll take either one, wins the tickets. You and I are the judges. Did you hear what you have to do?
Eric and Savage.
Eric and Savage.
I kind of. Can you say it one more time?
Okay. Do you know the Marge Simpson sisters, do you know what they sound like?
Yeah, like they smoke about 5 packs a day.
Yes. So if you could do the best imitation, or if you can sound like me right now, because my voice when I do that sounds like the Simpson sisters. So let's hear your Simpson sisters, this for Saints tickets.
Homer, you're a complete moron.
That's pretty good. All right, Eric, hold on. You maybe. All right, let's go to who's this now?
I don't have anybody yet.
What do you mean? The lights, the things are lighting up. Go to line two. You don't want to go to line two.
Not yet.
Why not? Why not?
This thing's not updating.
Okay, just go to line two. We'll find out who it is. Hello? Hello? We know you're there. We can hear your breathing. Nobody there on line two?
Aaron.
Aaron, you there?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Hey, how you been?
I'm bad. I'm doing good, man. How are you doing, bud?
Good. Did you hear what you have to do?
Cowabunga, dude.
No, you have to do the Simpsons sisters. Cowabunga's good. But...
I did their Simpsons boys. Pass me a cigarette.
It's not bad either. Maybe we should have him and Eric go together. No, we can't do that to him. All right, you know what? Let's, I think the phones are acting up a little again. Eric, go back to Eric again. Eric, I need to hear it again.
Thomas, you're a complete moron.
All right, let's go to line two. All right, I got to hear it again from
Aaron.
Aaron.
Pass me a cigarette.
They're both damn good. Are any of them better than me?
Well, you've got it down pat, so it's really tough. Do you want the tickets?
No, I don't want the tickets. Aaron, Eric. Eric, Aaron. They're both pretty good. What do you think? Let's do the coin flip. Get a coin?
Like, I have a coin.
Hold on.
I've got a number behind my back.
You guys, Aaron and Eric, you're both so good, we have to go to the coin. Aaron was on first. Eric was on first, so he's heads. And we'll go. You'll hear the coin hitting the tabletop. Let's get over there.
Lost the coin.
Eric is heads, and Aaron is tails. It came up tails. So Aaron wins the tickets.
Aaron!
Eric, you were great, though. They both were really good. Thank you for doing that. So we'll take care of that. Give them to Aaron. Eric, you were great, though. Put Eric on a second. Eric, you get more air time because you lost the coin flip.
Great.
No, that was pretty good. Now, do you do other imitations?
No, not on radio.
That's a good point.
Well, what do you do in the shower? Do you have like? What are your imitations? The ones you do?
I couldn't even come up with it right now.
All right. Yeah, well, can you do any other cartoon characters or anybody else from The Simpsons?
Any other cartoon characters?
Or how about somebody else from The Simpsons?
Nope.
That was pretty good. Now, who were you telling me? Hellboy was telling me that Harry Shearer's leaving The Simpsons.
Harry Shearer's taken off.
So how many?
A lot of voices for that show.
A lot of voices.
Who was his biggest voice?
No idea. I don't know if anybody can replace him.
Well,
I looked today, and he's got a ton of voices that he did.
Oh, he has Mr. Burns, too?
Mr. Burns, I think he's Principal Skinner. He's Kent Brockman.
Oh,
he's Dr. Hibbert.
Why would he leave?
He's got a lot of... Well, the show's been running forever.
I know, but he doesn't
need any more money.
You're a good point. Well, you know, if they need the Simpson sisters, I'm available.
You're available a couple times a year for that?
You're darn tootin'. Once a year, pal. Once a year.
You said it lasts for 2 days.
Yesterday was the start of it. And then I could go on to my Sixth Elvis voice. That's there, too. Eric, thanks a lot. You're a good sport. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. Hey, by the way, this one, oh, my goodness gracious. Defensive end Brian Robinson suffered a pectoral injury while working out on today. What? This is not good. The pectoral injuries could keep the player out for a long period of time. This could be a big problem. We're going to have to stay on top of that one. Viking star pass rusher suffers pectoral injury while working out. Peter Schrager and Mike Garofalo of Fox Sports claim Brian Robinson, the Viking starting DE, suffered a pectoral injury while working out today. As of now, the extent is unknown, but this is an injury that has kept players out for up to a year. We're going to stay on top of that one for you.
Took Phil Oldholt out for the year last season.
That was the pec.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not a good one. You know what? We're going to take a quick break when we get back. We'll talk to Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Who's that sound like? It's sponsored. Jim's segment sponsored by
Stella
Premier Pool and Spa. Stella. Who?
I don't know. You sound like you were a character from Streetcar Named Desire.
Stella. No, that still sounds like the Simpson sisters. I'll be right back with Jim Suhan.
Two legendary.
We are back, and we are joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa built in Canada. The Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. Jim, probably glad you weren't in Detroit covering that one.
No, that was pretty ugly. you know, really not overall, not an unexpected series. They played one close one. They won one blowout. They lost one really ugly game. The swing game, the first game was really kind of the swing game, and that's the one that went to the Tigers.
Yep.
But still, you know, let's be honest, feel a lot better about that team today than the last time they left Detroit.
Yeah, and it's, now they're, what are they now? They're 2-7 against Detroit? I think that's what it is.
Basically they played well against everybody but Detroit, and they had the, you know, the horrible opening series. They had the terrible blown lead at Target Field, and now they lost 2 out of 3, but you know, this is baseball. This was one swing away from winning on Tuesday night, and then one game going each way. It's, you know, and frankly, the fact that Nolasco actually pitched well might be the biggest thing that happened in this series. Pelfrey wasn't great, obviously, and that's a little concerning, but the expectations for him weren't all that high to begin with going into the season. If they can salvage Nolasco, instead of having to face Cunningham sometime this year, instead of that having him be a decent fourth starter or something, that would go a long way to being competitive.
Well, we talked about this a little bit yesterday when we do a baseball segment with Al Newman, and he wasn't able to make it, but Pete Wagner, they do a Saturday baseball show. Irvin Santana, when they get him back, that could be a jolt, a good one for this this pitching staff.
Yeah, I mean, and I wrote about it the other day. This team is more competitive and better off right now than we thought they'd be going into the season, much more competitive than we thought they'd be after that first week. Mets with zero contributions from Irvin Santana so far, very minimal contributions from Ricky Nolasco, and those two guys are the two biggest free agent signings in terms of dollars in franchise history. Not a whole lot from Joe Mauer, who has the largest contract in franchise history, and without calling up any of your truly top prospects yet, whether it's Meyer, Barrios, Buxton, or Sano. So, you know, they're doing it without the guys who are really supposed to turn the franchise around. So if they start getting those guys to either show up or contribute, then maybe you got something.
Well, and they're also doing it with Dozier as their leadoff guy, which was not part of the original plan. And just a little note about Aaron Hicks got another hit, so he's batting 364 for the Twins. Rosario, 192. Three strikeouts.
Rosario had a great first moment, and really since that home run on the first pitch in the major leagues, he struck out much more than a guy of his skill should strike out, so he looks a little overmatched. And I'll take it back. I had a conversation with Tom Kelly maybe, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago, and I asked him, you know, you've had so much time to reflect on your managerial career. If you could start over right now managing a team, is there anything you would do differently? Is there any philosophy you would change? And he didn't go, like, really deep and philosophical. He made a really practical statement. He said, the one thing he would do is instead of getting attached to the guys that he chose for the big league team out of spring training or attached to guys who played well for him off the bench, he would treat all but his core players like a taxi squad and just send them up and down, send them up and down. A guy gives you a good month, great, starts going south, send him to the minor leagues, let him regroup. Guys playing well in AAA, get him up here. Let him play well for you right now and then send him back down if he starts faltering. Well, you know, Rosario gave him a good couple games. Now he's not. Send him back down. Let him retool. You know, don't get locked into your roster. Treat the minor leagues like a huge taxi squad. Keep sending guys up and down until you find somebody who clicks.
Well, he must have been talking about that, and again, my voice, it's a little off. I've been occasionally, and we even had a contest, when I talk like this, I sound like Marge Simpson sisters. But that one I don't think you want to hear for the entire segment, so we won't go with that. But when you asked him about it, his career, it had to be when they were having the rough stretch after the World Series wins. Because, I mean, those guys were set in stone of who he was going to play, but later, it's when he had the team was just bad. Is that what he was talking about? Did he mean when he was managing?
I think he was talking about even with his good teams, he developed such a sense of loyalty for guys who had won for him, for guys he had ridden, some guys he had ridden minor league buses with. He might have been saying, you know, he loved Randy Bush, he loved Gene Larkin, he loved guys who had contributed, who had proven something to him, had great personalities, and. You know, whether it's the good years or the bad years, he felt like sometimes his loyalty overruled common sense. And I think even more so with bullpen guys. You know, again, you call a guy into the bullpen and he pitches out of five jams in a row. You feel loyal to him. You want to reward him. You want him to stick around. You want to see him do it again. But maybe that was his burst. And maybe he needs a month in the minor leagues to reset himself. So again, instead of making roster decisions based on loyalty, make them based on the fact that you know, if there's a big difference between the big leaguer who can do it every day and the guy who can give you a good week or a good month, and identify the guys who can only give you a good week or a good month, and get that out of them and then get them back down to the minors.
Well, what he really needed to be then is more like a mafia don than a manager, where it's not personal, it's business.
Right. Well, only the good thing about baseball, you don't have to kill them.
That's a good point.
I think the MLBPA has rules about that too.
No, you know what you mentioned about the MLBPA, and this will be it won't really involve it. But I was thinking about when you said it, for whatever reason, it triggered this extra point attempt that the league is going to look into. Where are you on that? Do you think it matters that they move it to the 15, essentially making an extra point 33 yards?
I mean, honestly, the statistics are what? I think the regular extra point is like 98%, and where they want to move it to would be 95%. So you bring in just a little bit more of chance. Here's my feeling. It's always been my feeling whenever we talk about special teams and extra points and field goals in football. Why are you taking this game that is built on toughness and strategy and choice between running and passing and, you know, this incredible physical spectacle and handing the deciding play of the game over to some guy who doesn't play football? Why would you do that? Everybody is more interested in a 2-point conversion than an extra point. People get up and leave for the extra point. 2-point conversion, everybody's
you
rooting
stay.
For the couch.
You're right.
Why would you chase somebody away from your game for even 5 minutes? So I want either the extra point to be so, the single point kick to be so difficult that it encourages people to try to go for two, or I want you to eliminate the extra point kick and make everybody have to run a play to get that 1 point or 2 points or whatever, however you want to structure it. But make people play football to score points.
See, I've always thought you basically, for the extra point, you pick a name out of the hat and that guy has to kick.
I like it. Well, anything that doesn't reward you having a non-football player scoring points for your team. I mean, kickers are not football players. They're just not.
Yeah. And I'd love to see Linval Joseph kick an extra point.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Speaking
of Deflategate, he might deflate, but he might take a bite out of it. I mean, it might just maybe give him points for that. I mean, really, I've always thought it, other than the fact that the game is named football for some strange reason, there's just no reason to have kickers. There's just none.
No, and you know, and who's the last one? Was it Flutie? And I loved it whenever you see like Jim Thorpe All American, the drop kick.
Yes.
It's fun to watch.
I mean, and that's a real football play, something difficult, you know? I mean, I guess the value I would give to place kickers is, you know, you do want it to be a dramatic situation where if you're on your own 20-yard line with a minute left, it's not that you have to score a touchdown to win. You might be able to make three great plays and set up a guy for a 50-yard field goal. That's where place kicking has a place in the game. And the last-second dramatic field goal from long range with the clock running out, that's worth watching. The extra point is not worth watching. 33-yard field goals are not worth watching. In fact, the 33-yard field goal is what's wrong with the game. You, instead of having a team going for it on fourth down, which would be the most dramatic play of the game, you have them settling for a safe 3 points, where the guy makes it like 85% of the time. There's no drama. It's like an automatic 3 points. It's not exciting. It's not a football play. It should have nothing to do with football.
You're making a hell of an argument there, Jim.
Believe me, this has bothered me for a long time. I lose a lot of sleep over this.
I bet you do. Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. Jim, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Hang in there, Bob. Thanks, man.
I'll try. Thanks. I can take a quick break. Come back. Talk to our guy, the Chief, David Alcaro. TheChiefSports.com is where you can read about the Chief. Talk to him about the Preakness, about the NBA and the NHL playoffs. He's a big Ranger guy. He's been there. We'll talk to the Chief next. That can mean only one thing. The president is here. Nope, it's the chief. We're joined by the chief, David Alcaro. You can check him out on thechiefsports.com. And he's presented by Liquid Ice Energy Drink. Chief, it's been a bit. How are you?
I'm doing good, Bob. Sorry to your voice, but you sound great. But
right.
You're turning yourself.
I said, I told Hellboy here, our producer during the break. Sometimes I sound like Frank Pantangeli from The Godfather 2. Hey, yeah, And then also I've got who Scott Farrell is?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, now tell me, and it's been pretty unanimous. Do I sound more like Farrell or the Marge Simpson sisters? Our guest right now is the Chief David L. Carroll.
Yeah.
I think it's the Simpson sisters.
Yes, Selma. Oh, I can't remember the other one, too. I'm blanking.
Is it Paula? What's the other one?
Patty.
Excuse me.
And Selma. Good call.
Yeah, but you know what? It's actually, it's been fun because we did a giveaway of St. Paul Saints tickets. So the guys we had on had to do a better imitation than me of the Simpson sisters. They were both pretty good. They were so good, I had to flip a coin to pick who got the tickets. Now, were you at the Rangers game?
I was, and I should sound like you, but I use my hands, I clap, I try to save my voice because
smart move.
It was a wild scene last night, obviously, a Game 7 overtime win, about as exciting as you can get in sports.
You know what is incredible about this? The fact that 3 years in a row, and I believe the exact same day, he has had Lundqvist has had 35 saves to win a Game 7 3 years in a row. That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. That's an incredible coincidence, but just the way he plays in big games, it really is just amazing to watch, and just his guts and his ability to come up clutch in big spots. But he's got two more series. He's only halfway there, and I don't know if New York Rangers fans can take it.
Well, do you see them advancing to the... Because we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and I'd like to see a Rangers-Chicago series.
Yeah, obviously I'd like to see the Rangers get through Tampa Bay. It's going to be tough. A lot of former New York Rangers on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa's probably a little quicker team than even the Rangers are. Maybe a little smaller. I think the Rangers have a size advantage. They'll have the home ice advantage. It'll probably be one-goal games. Every Rangers game has been one goal in the playoffs. I would expect extremely close series. And then Game 7, if it does, the home ice will definitely help the New York Rangers.
Well, he doesn't lose on home. I thought I saw or heard a statistic that how many years they have to go back when the Rangers have lost a series on their own ice?
I don't think they've actually lost a Game 7 at home, since 1968, this version of the Madison Square Garden. I don't think they've lost a home Game 7. They haven't had a lot. They haven't had a lot of home ice advantage. This isn't, any sort of stellar franchise. It's just more of kind of a bit of a lucky thing where they've won Game 7s at home.
Now, the other thing going on this week, I know you were at the Kentucky Derby. The Preakness coming up, is it American Pharoahs?
It should be. This is a very, very interesting story because his main competition is being trained by the same man. Bob Baffert is training both American Pharoah and the second choice Dortmund in a very strange situation where he can take away his own chances for the Triple Crown. And it's very strange, I think, that the owner of Dortmund is putting his horse in the race as two different owners. And I think it's a mistake. I think that to clear the path for American Pharoah to try to get to the Triple Crown, the Preakness doesn't really help your breeding value. So I don't understand why he's putting Dortmund in the race. And Dortmund, I don't think, will even run in the Belmont Stakes. I don't think the distance will help him. So this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I really don't think it'll be an awful story if Dortmund beats American Pharoah. But American Pharoah should win. It's 4-5 favorite. Does draw the one post, which isn't that hard because it's only an 8-horse field. It's not like the Kentucky Derby drawing the one post where you virtually have no chance. Firing Line, who came second in the Derby, also maybe an outside chance, but there's very few competitors in this race, and it should be an easier path to the potential Triple Crown for American Pharoah.
Yeah, we're talking to the Chief, David L. Carroll. Chief, I was surprised. I would have thought Baffert would have talked the owner of Dortmund out of going into it.
Me too. I don't understand this, and I don't... I mean, first of all, is Baffert going to give his 100% best effort to train Dortmund or American Pharoah. It doesn't make sense to me to do this. Just, you know, I could say, all right, it was unfair for the owner that he has to sit his horse out, but sitting him out of the Preakness is not that big of a race. I mean, I know it's a grade one race, it's a $1 million race, but an owner at that level, there's a lot of other big three-year-old races later in the season. There's no reason to come back and try to race in the Preakness and take away the chance at a Triple Crown, which the sport desperately needs.
Well, okay, let's say American Pharoah wins. How many horses would you anticipate would do the Belmont?
Yeah, you know, probably 10 to 12, and there'll be a lot of horses that are, you know, haven't raced in either of them that are sitting in prime. There'll be a couple of Derby runners, Todd Fletcher, sitting out a bunch of horses. He's another trainer that's got had four horses in the Derby. I would expect him to have a couple in the Preakness. I mean, in the Belmont Stakes, Nick Zito will probably bring back a horse or two. He's a local New York horse who does a very good job training horses for the Belmont Stakes. So it's going to be a really hard feat. We've seen it a handful of times over the past, you know, 10, 15 years. I've been out there at Belmont Park waiting for that Triple Crown, and it's really elusive. It's such a hard thing for a horse to do. You know, three different tracks, three different distances, 5 weeks, and it'll be very hard for American Pharoah to do, but he's got the talent, and he's got the jockey, he's got the trainer, and now he's just got to get it done.
Well, the question that remains with him is, though, can he handle the distance?
Yeah, that is a huge factor. The Belmont Stakes run at 1.5 miles. This Preakness is actually 1/16 shorter than the Kentucky Derby. Kentucky Derby, 1.25 miles. Preakness, 1.3 miles. So it's a little bit of an easier race than the Kentucky Derby. Only 8 horses compared to 19. Obviously, that's the biggest factor. But it's still a very hard race because the horse is coming off of 2 weeks rest, a very short period of time for this level of horse. So Preakness is still tough to get through, but the Derby winner usually has a lot of success. And then the distance at the Belmont is the factor. There'll be horses that are specially trained for the distance. That's what we saw last year when Tonalist upset California Chrome to deny the Triple Crown.
Chief, it's always great talking to you. We need to talk again, and we'll make more time for it next time.
Love talking. Thank you, Bob.
Next time I'll have my voice back. I promise it'll be there. All right, the Chief David Alcaro, Chief Sports, thechiefsports.com. Check him out there. Also presented by Liquid Ice Energy Drink. Again, thanks to the Chief. Going to turn things over to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. We'll be back tomorrow. I know my voice will be better. We may have to go with the Elvis.
Or maybe the Simpsons the whole time.
Until then, talk to you later.
Sports Radio 105. The